This is How Men Think with Brooks Like and Gavin DeGraw, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Welcome to How Men Think podcast. My name is Brooks Like, coming to you live from...
Yes, we are.
Viva! We are in Las Vegas. That's where our whole budget went. We haven't been paid for this show yet.
That's right.
Spent the whole budget on this suite here in Planet Hollywood.
It is sweet.
It is sweet, isn't it? This is my buddy, Mr. Gavin DeGraw, right here.
Good to be here, baby.
Yeah, it's
come
good
on
to have
now.
You, buddy. This is your town.
This is my town.
You everywhere we walk, everybody's like, Gavin, Gavin.
No, they're saying, Gavin, get out of the way. Hey, Brooks, what are you doing?
But you have a place here.
I do have a place here. I love it here.
I've actually, my thoughts on this town have changed just listening to you talk about it.
Oh, good. See?
Because you come here and you think it's got such a connotation of entertainment and industry, that kind of stuff, wildlife. But yes. You actually find a different meaning in this town. You have a place here and come here.
Good.
And then,
so I changed your mind a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
You know what they call that?
What?
Manipulation.
I call that friendship. But you call it that. Some would say you are the modern day Elvis. Is that what they call you, Gav?
No.
I'm going to start calling you that from now on. No. For sure you can sing.
No, no.
You've practiced in an Elvis voice.
These hips lie.
What about Sinatra? No. Can you sing Sinatra?
I love Sinatra.
Can you sing it? Tonight.
Yes, I can.
Are we going to do karaoke tonight?
No, God.
Yes, let's do it.
No, I told you I'm not doing karaoke with a rock star. It doesn't make sense.
You are a rock star. So we got Rick and Dimitri here with us. Dimitri, you are a rock star. Don't
but
undersell
not,
yourself.
Not to the legitimate sense that Gavin is. I'm not going to follow him on stage.
Listen.
Do you want to do Islands in the Stream? I'll do Islands in the Stream.
I love Islands in the Stream.
Oh, I guess we're doing karaoke.
That's a great jam.
Yeah, all right.
In case you guys
that
can't...
That makes me want to eat a peanut butter cup.
In case you guys can't hear Gavin right now, he's eating peanut butter cups, not talking into his mic.
Peanut butter cups, Star Kit God. Kats.
Those are the bad reviews we get on Apple, on iTunes, is when they're like, we can't hear the one guy,
Come on,
Gavin.
Man. Haven't heard all these Marble Mouth recordings right now hitting the top 40?
Oh, man. But we are in Vegas, gents.
Just modernizing our podcast.
Yeah, I love it that we're in Vegas, and it's kind of funny because like, Rick, I think, didn't get the memo that we were coming to Vegas because he's got pants on, he's got a t-shirt, he's got like a Chanel sweater.
Chanel sweater. I'm a little chilly. I mean, I plan ahead. I knew everything was going to be in air conditioning wherever we were going.
Are you going to like a bat mitzvah after this? Is that why you have the nice sweater?
No, but in a couple of weeks I will be. Yes.
You do look trendy though, Rick.
You look thank you.
I want to say, all you guys look tan too.
I look tan.
You don't.
Dimitri looks tan.
I meant the other two.
Dimitri looks tan.
Dimitri
is sitting poolside, I think.
No, I'm just Greek. I'm just naturally this color. Oh. You're from Canada. I don't know what your problem is.
That hurts me.
That hurts me.
You don't like my pastiness?
You're from New York.
I look like a bottle of Elmer's glue.
If you put on an orange hat, you look exactly like that.
Oh, let's get him an orange hat. He's got a blue one on right now.
If he eats any more of those Reese's Pieces, he might.
The beauty is if I go to the pool, everyone around me gets more tan.
There you go. You're so kind-hearted.
You're the type of person by the pool that... Like moms would come over and apply sunscreen to you because they would feel badly. They're like, he is going to burn.
They're like, look, that man's soul has left his body.
Oh, buddy, you're too hard on yourself. I heard a rumor, though, Gav. Well, Rick and Dimitri and I and Ryan, we all heard a rumor that you're not staying at the hotel with us.
No, I'm not.
Because?
I have a house here.
Oh, I see that. Oh. I heard that rumor, but I thought it was... False, because I haven't been invited. Have you guys been invited?
You're invited.
No, I mean...
It's not like a house. It's like, you know, it's like a hotel room that I keep here at another hotel. A different one from where you guys are intentionally.
That hurts.
It's weird. The address is called MGM Grand.
Is it?
There it is.
Is it a penthouse in one of the casinos?
No.
Yeah.
It's a... You know,
it damn well should be.
Do you have a driveway?
One room. I live in a, you know, it's like a hotel. And because I don't,
you don't
cook
like
too good.
You don't like.
I clean worse.
Landscaping.
I don't like the I don't like doing that kind of work.
You like turnkey.
I like turnkey.
Gotcha.
I like room service. You know, listen, I could cook for me and nearly kill myself and everyone who lives in my building because I'll burn the place down. Or I could, you know, take out or go to, you know, a restaurant or whatever like that. You know, I like hotel living. Hotel living's nice.
Okay, buddy.
But is there like a little cocktail get together at your place before we go out or something?
Yeah, if you bring over some cocktails.
I think that's a good idea.
We might as well just stay in the casino. Yeah. But we have to bring our own cocktails.
I don't think you're going to be overwhelmed with my place. It's a very simple.
It's just a gesture. It's the gesture.
You guys are welcome to come over. And clean my house.
See, it's the gesture. All right.
He's downplaying it. He's like, I have a small room. I bet you he lives next to Copperfield or
something. I bet he's got a spread.
Oh, my God. He's got
15-acre spread with lions and fire and you name it. Yeah. You drive in the gate and fire goes off.
You're going to be so disappointed.
Big model.
You're going to be like, man, you should have done something else for a living.
His doorbell is like Donka Shane or whatever that song is.
Balloons go up. It's like Gavin's
Wayne
home.
Wayne Newton opens the door and greets you at Gavin's house.
He's right back here.
Yeah, it's not even a doorbell.
He's tuning his guitars.
You press the button and Wayne Newton starts singing live.
I wish.
You guys are looking fresh today after last night.
Yeah, I'm a little slow today, but hey, that's all right. I had a great time last night.
Yeah.
And I'm excited.
How much coffee did you have?
I had like 14 cups, I think.
Oh, did it help?
No.
I'm on number 15 right now.
We're at the iHeart Radio Festival. So we watched some acts last night. We watched some music. We had a great time. Watched Hootie and the Blowfish last night.
That was fun. Here's the problem with that. I was like, I'm kind of excited to see Hootie and the Blowfish. And Brooks was like, me too. And I was like, yeah, there's something nostalgic about it. He's like, absolutely. I was like, man, it reminds me of that summer during college. He goes, oh, I was in the sixth grade. And I was like, you know what? Shove it.
it might have even been grade four. But man, Darius crushed it last night. He was awesome.
He really was a great show, man.
Yeah. So we also have another very esteemed guest on this show.
Yes, we do.
Real well. Before we let you introduce him, this is a friend of the show, and he is an athlete turned music superstar.
That's right.
Gives me hope. I'm really excited to ask this because that's me.
You're going to be a superstar too, singer.
I'm in a pivotal moment in my life here.
No. I heard you singing "Hold My Hand" last night. You're not. Nothing's not happening.
Hey, well.
Maybe he's a dancing career.
Baby steps, buddy. He has 5 number one hits.
Absolutely. And he's only put out 5 songs.
That's a good track record.
But
that's
right. I'll let you introduce this big handsome
yes,
man.
Yes, I will. All right, guys. So I've been knowing this guy for a number of years. We met, kind of by happenstance. We became buddies, and since then, he's become a big superstar in the country world, but I think not just the country world soon. I think it'll be bigger than only the country world. Very, very talented and awesome guy, my good friend, Mr. Brett Young.
Yeah!
Give it up for him.
Thanks, buddy. We didn't meet by happenstance. I stalked you and your music.
Well, that's close to happenstance. Yeah.
It's safer to call it happenstance. Yeah.
I fangirled you real hard for a real long time.
So let's get into this. I've heard that you were a big fan of his music, but I heard you guys had a really interesting meeting, like just a happen chance.
Yeah, we did. He played the Greek Theater
in L.A.
In Los Angeles, and I had brought like my cousins and stuff, and Gavin does something like, I don't want to call you out for this, but you do something that I think is pretty cool. Like when you can slip out and listen to your openers, you do.
Yeah,
like you'll go find a pocket where you feel like it's a good idea to go out there and you were doing that that night.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the ukulele guy from Hawaii? Jake something.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. I think my wife listens to
him. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But Gavin had snuck out to like listen to this dude play, and I'm walking in with my two younger female cousins, and I was like, oh, you got to meet Gavin. But meanwhile, I haven't met you yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk them over and I give them the moment, and I'm walking away going like, I've worn out 3 of his records. How did I just give away this moment?
Yeah.
Like, I'm the bigger fan. So fast forward, end of the night, it was a great show. And I was living in L.A. We were at Mel's Diner on Sunset at 3 a.m. like you do.
Yeah.
And this guy comes walking down Sunset. I think you had just left, but out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And you're walking down Sunset, and I just flagged you down. And I was like, but it was probably like pretty obnoxious because I think I yelled at you and said, I quit my job to pursue music because of you.
Did you really say
it
that?
It was something along those lines. Yeah. And he was on a phone call too, and he was like, I'm going to have to call you back. Knowing Gavin now, I'm surprised he didn't like come at me feeling threatened, like ready to throw blows because I'm screaming at him at 3 o'clock in the morning in LA.
He probably thought you were going to ask him for money.
I know, right?
He's like, I'm out of here.
Let me hold a dollar. but he got off the phone and he actually, I said, I'm about to make my first EP, and he just lit right into 20 minutes of advice and 20 minutes he didn't have to give me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And if you couldn't be more of a fan than you already were. I think it just turned into, you know, next thing I know, I'm out in Hawaii to see U2 and Green Day and Pearl Jam at the Aloha Bowl. And it turns out Gavin's playing the Waikiki Shell the same weekend. So I actually snuck into his sound check. And next thing you know, we're running into each other at his show.
But he's not good at sneaking in because
he's 6'5".
Also, I'm in like board shorts with my shirt off at noon, sitting in the front row of soundcheck, going like, "We made it." We didn't get kicked out of that.
Sitting next to this guy, I feel like it's like a father son shot. He's so much bigger than me. I'm just sitting on this couch, like my feet are dangling off the couch.
Except you're bald.
Oh, jeez, Rick. Sorry. Come on.
Don't put yourself in the dangling feet category. They're touching the ground. Yeah. It's a whole different category.
So hold on. You said you quit your job. This is a good segue.
It was a really good job. I was waiting tables at the restaurant in the Hyatt. In Century City. I was really on my way.
But before that, you were about to make it big.
The Hyatt is a very nice brand.
The Hyatt served you very well in baseball. Correct?
Yeah, baseball was it was something I thought, not even thought, we were sure that was going to be my life.
From the time you were a kid?
Yeah, I think, you know, baseball, basketball, and football were part of the story all the way up until high school. But when you started getting to that level where you were competitive at all of them, you have to pick which one there might be a future in, a financial future.
Yeah.
And it was definitely baseball. And like, I love baseball, but of the three, it was probably my second favorite. I like basketball more.
Really?
But I was throwing 90 miles an hour in high school. So on a team that was ranked 17th in the country. So that would it just seemed like that was the obvious thing. And then we got called by the Twins and the Devil Rays. They're now the Rays.
Yeah.
They're not the Devil Rays anymore. But And they're allowed to call high school students. It's a little different, the rules. It's
different than hockey, for sure.
It's also different than college baseball. You can't. There's a lot of rules that protect how much conversation you're allowed to have pre-draft and if you're coming out of college. But in high school, it's like you're kind of protecting the franchise from wasting a high round pick on a guy that wants to go to college.
Yeah. You know,
'cause then you'll waste your pick and he'll choose college and you just lost that pick.
4 years. Mm.
So I had multiple conversations with the Twins and the Devil Rays, and it just never felt like enough money to forego an education. Joke was on me though, 'cause I didn't finish my education. I hurt my elbow and never went pro after that. Had to have surgery. But
how old was that?
That was I had transferred. I started at Ole Miss, and I had transferred at the time to Fresno State in Central California. I just wanted to get back to Cali. And it was opening night my junior year. But because I had used a transfer red shirt, I couldn't medical red shirt because we didn't like put in for it soon enough because we thought I'd be back. So I missed my junior and senior year. And so at that point, it was like,
dang. So your whole life you're thinking, because like as a professional athlete, I know what you grow up with and you want to be it. It's the only thing on your mind. You're thinking, I'm going to be a pitcher in the majors. And your family's probably thinking the same thing too.
Yeah.
And then you have, was it Tommy John?
Tommy John.
Yeah, Tommy John. Yeah. And it completely alters the course of your life. And then,
but the listeners don't all know what Tommy John
Tommy John surgery is replacing the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow with the palmaris longus tendon in the forearm that connects to skin instead of muscle, which means it doesn't really do anything. And 30% of people don't have it. Most of them are women.
Can you please give us some details instead of just dancing around the issue?
That's a very generic answer, Brett. Come on, man.
That's why we just say Tommy John.
It honestly is the ligament that connects your forearm to your upper arm.
It's a big, big issue for pitchers, especially. It's a massive issue for pitchers. So then after that, did you kind of give up hope of baseball, or did you still try? Because I'm trying to figure out how you got from that to now being – a massive country music star, because I'm looking for a second career here.
By the way, quite a fallback there. You know, no more baseball. All right, I'll just be a music superstar.
Yeah. Did you have, was music in you as a kid, like all through this journey?
Yeah, so my dad's a pastor. I grew up in the church. And, you know, I think there's like, every school is different because every community is different and the whole thing. Like, there's always like a thing that all the guys do. And at my school, there were two, but none of them were like, sports was like third. It was like a tertiary thing. It was like, the surf team was really good.
Okay.
And everybody learned guitar so they could play worship songs.
Oh, wow.
And I got thrown into leading worship in high school way before I ever thought I would pursue it as anything else than leading worship. So I played guitar and sang, just thinking I was like kind of serving the church and the high school and the whole thing.
Right.
And then I went to college to play baseball, and I didn't even, my freshman year when I went to Ole Miss, I did not bring my guitar with me to college. I said, if I'm doing this, if you're, I'm going to turn down the Twins and the Devil Rays and the whole thing, I'm going to commit to D1 baseball. And I got 3 years to get more money and make this a thing.
Yeah.
And so, and then I left Ole Miss after my freshman year, 'cause I was like, I want to be back at the beach. And, I came back to the beach, I brought my guitar with me, and I started playing again. And then I hurt myself. And, the kind of the Gavin story where you where you came in for me was when I hurt myself, I started just playing guitar, no singing, and I was learning a bunch, like all the Dave Matthews records. Mm-hmm. Dave has his own way of playing, like chords and like he self taught himself. Like if you watch him play Satellite, his hand is spread out all the way across the fretboard, and he's playing an E that takes up two frets.
Yeah,
like he has the voicings he has on the guitar. Uh-huh. And it's like, so I was like, well, for dexterity and stuff, I'll just learn the way he plays everything. I don't care that it's wrong or right. I'm gonna like learn to do difficult things.
Yeah,
and in the middle of that, I heard Chariot, the whole record for the first time. I was watching One Tree Hill, and I heard I Don't Want to Be, and I went, well, that's cool. And then I went and bought the record, and then I wore it out three times, and then Chariot Strip came out, and I just
What was that like? What was cool? What intrigued you? Because you probably heard a lot of songs at that time, but why did that one stick and resonate with you?
Gavin's writing is different than anybody's I've ever heard. He has a way of saying something that a very common concept in a way that nobody's ever said it before. So you can relate because you've been through it, but you've never heard it said that way.
Mm.
It's something that I fight to do as a songwriter all the time is like it's in the same way that we're not going to like recreate a chord progression or write a new chord.
Right.
We're not going to do that. We're not going to come up with a concept that's touching to people that hasn't been talked about before, but can we say it different? Can we come at it from a different angle?
Yeah.
And so I remember listening to that going like, this is making me feel something and I'm not even quite sure why. Like, I want to meet this guy and talk to him about like what his experience was within this that made him say it this way. 'Cause it's still making me feel something. But like, I remember like years later, you got to tell me the story about Chariot and going back home to visit. And you were sitting in that church when you had that idea for that song.
Yeah.
Like I would have never known that was it, but without knowing that was it, I was still feeling something. Mm-hmm. I was still connecting to it. Right. And I just thought that was it. Like that was what made me want to write my own songs because I think like the beauty of music is making other people feel connected to your story.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just keep telling the same story everybody's been telling, like it just becomes white noise, you know?
Right.
And so it was fresh and different.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that compliment, man.
Wow. How does that feel to hear him? Is that
for
like,
me?
Is that like an ultimate compliment as an artist when somebody describes your music like that?
Yeah, it's the ultimate compliment. You know, when you're right, when you're an artist, it's one thing. When you're a writer, it's another thing. So artists are more they're performers, they're interpreters, you know, like actors. Writers are creators, more so than necessarily performers or interpreters. And so when you're a creator and someone who is also a creator is listening to your stuff and thinking about it and honoring the way that you are creating and impressed with the way you're creating or saying, hey, I like what they're doing, then it's a different thing than an artist simply covering a song.
Yeah.
If they're covering it as a writer, going, I do this song because as a writer, I connect with this thing. You know, it's different. It's a different type of thing. It would be like if Tarantino recreated someone else's film. You know,
yeah.
It's almost, it seems like the ultimate compliment.
It's the ultimate compliment. You know? As a songwriter, it's the ultimate compliment, really. And because when you, you know, when you commit to any craft, it's not a hobby. You know, it's really your life. You know, you go to bed thinking about what your next song could be, and you dream about music. I do, and then I dream songs. And when I remember my dreams, I hear music, and I'll wake up and I'll hear music. And so it's really consumes.
Did you just forget to turn off the radio?
Or is it no, actually? Man, it's music. Oh, it's dude, always music.
Dude, slept through the alarm
you.
Again.
I'm with you. It's the same. Yeah, I'll wake up with the fears. Yeah. Like, I'll have music dreams where I feel like I blew a show.
Totally. Yeah, 100%.
But I'm singing a song that I've never heard before.
That's right.
In my life. And and then maybe it's a song idea, or maybe it's like, maybe don't ever do this. But I dream I dream in music, too.
Yeah, which is an amazing thing. And so that's more proof that's your, in my opinion, your true destiny. You know, if you're dreaming song, you're dreaming music, that's your destiny, you know. I mean, if that's what's the majority of those fantasies, those dreams, I feel like that's your heart speaking to you, you know, and that's your fate, you know, constantly, you know, knocking on your door saying this is, you know, this is the path. It's a beautiful thing.
That was in your family too. That didn't start with you. I remember sitting in that coffee shop in Honolulu with your mom and dad, and you and your dad were going back and forth about like old soul R&B songs.
Yes.
And they started singing their favorite songs a cappella in a coffee shop back and forth at each other. We got kicked out.
We did.
We were too loud.
We did.
We had just played the Waikiki Shell, and we got kicked out of a coffee shop the next morning because they were singing a cappella.
We were being too loud.
Because it was too loud.
Singing at the table to each other.
But like,
you know?
Because you guys, you and your dad talking music, got so passionate about music.
Yeah.
You went back, you were going back 40, 50 years of music singing verse chorus at a time, and I was like, oh man, I mean, I'm jealous of that upbringing, because my parents love music and they brought me up on R&B, but like, it was in your blood, man. You didn't even have a choice.
I didn't really have a choice. There was so much music in the house growing up, you know. And it's interesting when my dad sings, it's funny, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but when my dad sings, he cries, his eyes water, and it had always been that way. And one day, a handful of years ago, I said, "Dad, why do you cry when you sing? Is it because of however you're getting the notes out? It's making your eyes water, less having this a physical effect that you can't help, or is it emotional?" He said, "It's emotional for me.
It's probably everything.
And every time
express,
I sing, I weep. I just get so emotional. Mm. You know."
I love listening to you guys talk about music. I want to get more into this, more into your story, Brett. We got to take a quick break, and then we'll dive more into that.
Great.
Back from break, we have Mr. Brett Young in the house, and I'm just fired up. This guy is inspiring, really inspiring for me, because I'm in a big transition point of my life, and so I want to get your story. I want to learn from you how you switched. You were going to be a pro athlete, then you switched to like playing guitar again, just because you wanted to, you said, work on dexterity and just a little different change in your life. At what point did it come to like, okay, now I want to write music to make this a career? Or did you just want to write music to express yourself? Like I mentioned, you talk about, I need to make more money in baseball. I want to get in a better position to make more money in baseball. Did you approach music like that? Or was it just like, I want to do this to express myself?
Yeah, I think with baseball, it wasn't that I want to make more money. It was just that I saw the value in a college education, and it was like there is a number that you'd have to offer me to make me see the value in skipping college,
to bypass
and that
college
education. Right. And so that's what it was. And then once I made that decision, it was like, okay, you have 3 years, because in college baseball, if you play D1, you're not draft eligible again until your junior year.
Oh, okay.
So you have 3 years now to become the best that you can be before your draft year.
So your stock's high.
Wow. Right. So that was it. And with music, I mean, I wanted to write songs when I heard Chariot. I mean, that was it, right?
Wow.
But I still didn't know that I wanted to pursue it as a career. I just knew that, you know, it's a strange thing. Like, I don't know if all baseball players think of baseball like this, but as a pitcher, it was a creative outlet for me, because you like study hitters
Yeah.
And you like learn what pitches to throw and what counts. And that the part of my mind that we were talking about that like wakes me up thinking about music at the time would wake me up thinking about 3-2 counts against a left-handed hitter. I mean, like that, and I didn't know that was a creative outlet for me until I lost it and didn't have it anymore. And I didn't have a creative outlet anymore.
Oh, wow.
And so
powerful.
It sounds weird. I mean, it sounds like baseball doesn't sound like it would be a creative thing. It's definitely a physical outlet. Mm-hmm. But when I heard Chariot and started writing, I was not writing thinking I'm going to be a songwriter artist. It just made me want to write things down. And I immediately realized whether I liked the song or not, it was a creative outlet for me. And it was like filling that void that baseball took away. Mm-hmm. And so
cool.
How cool is that?
Amazing.
Yeah.
When I met Gavin, I had written 6 songs. He gave me advice, and we cut all of the 6 songs I had written. Was my first EP. We actually dropped one off because we used it for it. The one that we dropped ended up being used on Kim and Courtney Take New York.
When you
and
say,
so I got a placement on a TV show with the one dropped. Of the 6 that we didn't put on the EP.
Mm. And when you say we cut, you and Gavin?
No. Gavin gave me all the advice. But the best advice you gave me a ton of great advice, but you said, do you have a good microphone? I was like, I don't know what it is. And you said, even if you have to rent it, make sure it is the right microphone for your voice so people can hear your voice. Mm-hmm. You had never heard my voice before. Mm-hmm. But you said that we ended up going out and like renting the Neumann U87. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in a closet in a second bedroom, closet door shut, holding the U87 with a down comforter over my head as a as a dampening shield.
Yeah.
Like that's how we cut it. And
that's awesome.
I still listen back and I'm like, the best sounding thing on this record is the vocal quality.
That is awesome. But from a guy on like a massive stage where you are today to know that you started in a closet with a down comfort over your head
we
with
cut,
a rental
we cut
microphone.
6 songs like that in LA in the summer.
Damn, I love that. I love that.
Nobody will ever hear that music, by the way.
I love that hustle though.
Yeah, man. But that I think that's another representation of what it takes to make dreams come true. It takes lack of comfort. You know what I mean? You're not going to always walk into the studio of your dreams and get to cut your record. You know, you're going to be in a closet wearing a f***ing blanket over your head to dampen the sound. Yeah. Singing into a microphone that smells like somebody else's breath who had rented it before you. Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean?
Like, they always and smell like cigarettes, by the way.
You know what I mean? And it's, you know, and you're told, look, we got 4 hours. We only have a budget for 4 hours with this engineer. So, like, make it happen or 6 hours.
You said something to me, and you just kind of touched on it, and I don't want to get it wrong, but it was something along the lines of, and this was part of that first conversation we talked. Mm. It was like, if you've never been hungry, you've never wanted it enough. Or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And it always stuck with me. And what's funny is it applies all the time in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like if you've never been hungry, like if you've never been the starving artist, then you've never fought hard enough for it. But also like if you've never wanted it that bad.
Boy, being hungry, how healthy it is to be hungry for it. Yeah. You know, it's okay to suffer. If you're suffering, you have something to draw from, you know. And you get a lot of these people coming up, and they all want to be superstars. And they're, you know, a lot of their family members might have the money to help them out and stuff like that, you know. And they'll spend all the money on their kids to get them in the studio. But the kids don't want it bad enough because they don't need it.
Well, they never struggled. There's a sense of entitlement that comes with that.
And
this requires hard work.
Yeah, and I think all those things that you want to help people with, things like, you know, when we spoke, you and I, one time, we were talking about just it being hard to make a truck payment, you know what I mean, to pay for your pickup. And, you know, it would be nice if someone just said, hey, man, here's an extra few $100 this month, and here's an extra few hundred for the next month and next month. Yeah, thanks for the help. But at the same time, that help is going to take away a little bit of that desperation, that drive required to get to the next level. You know, sometimes the broken ladder is a good one because it'll teach you how to get that much stronger to skip a rung, you know?
Yep.
So that is also necessary, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and that truck payment is the thing that puts you in the position to have to take that cover gig that you probably don't want.
That's right.
Like you did.
No doubt about
it.
Like
I did. I mean, you did. You did it in New York. I did in L.A.
Yep.
I played other people's songs for people that didn't care for a really long time.
That's right.
But that's because I had a truck payment, not because that's where my heart and soul was,
right?
But because I was getting to do something I loved for people that didn't care, And that still felt better than taking a job that was going to suck my soul.
Yeah, I agree.
No, I got a question. So I got a question to Gav. What was it about? Because I'm sure other people have approached you, right? Mm-hmm. And been like, oh, can I ask you? I want to be a songwriter. What mm-hmm. was it that because you obviously gave a lot of advice and took some time. And mm-hmm. You're obviously you're a nice guy, but mm-hmm. it sounds like you went above and beyond with Brett. Now, what was it about? Did you recognize something?
I thought he was sincere, you know? Brett was sincere. He, you know, when you meet Brett, when you hang with Brett, I think you can tell when Brett approaches you that it's always a respectable place. Or, sorry, a respectful place, and he has a humble demeanor about him. You know, he has confidence, but he has a nice humble demeanor and respectful demeanor. He's a likable guy, mm-hmm. you know, and so when he engaged me, I believed him, and I saw myself in him. Of I know the position he's in. He has a dream. He has a goal. He's asking questions in a respectful way that I felt like if I had an opportunity to meet somebody, I would have done a similar type of thing or said similar types of things, you know. And it sounded when he asked me these questions, they sounded like they're coming from a real place. They weren't just it wasn't just a little quiz and an interview. It was someone who had a goal and had a dream and wanted real insight into how do I get there, you know? And so that's what I liked about it. It wasn't just somebody being nosy. Mm-hmm. Hey, bro, so what's it like on the first, you know, with the, and the, you know what I'm saying, bro? You know, and it wasn't like that, you know, it was a different thing. And I believed him when he had come up and said,
hey, I bet you get a lot of girls playing music. Then you would have been like, yeah, thanks, buddy. See ya.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe if I hadn't yelled at him obnoxiously, it wouldn't have worked either. Maybe that was the gold moment.
He might have let him.
Hey,
Brett, maybe you knew him better. Maybe you're like, hey, Gav, you want to get a steak? And he's like, yes, I like you. Hey, okay,
you're going to do just fine.
I will answer anything you want if you're picking up a steak.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny because when he first called to me on the street, I was like, oh no, I'm about to get like harassed, heckled, whatever, you know. And because I was out for a walk, I was just going for a walk, and it was the middle of the night, I was alone.
And then you look and he's enormous, and you're like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
Crap.
I was sitting down.
Blah, blah, blah.
I was sitting down.
You're sitting down now, and you're enormous, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Not my fault.
Exactly. He was sitting down, and still the giant table looked like an airplane tray in front of him. So, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh man, what's this guy want? I was like, yeah, he's kind of big, damn. So I was like, he's looking for an improvised weapon.
I swear, knowing what I know about you now, I can picture the way you got off your phone call. You were like ready just in case I was going to get aggressive.
Never
like,
know.
The way you put your phone away, you were like preparing yourself for something terrible.
The best thing would have been if he just cracks a chair over your head. And you're like, I just wanted to ask you about music.
Tell me about the microphone.
Hey, Brett.
I love your music.
Brett, I had a quick question. Was there a period after when you realized baseball was sort of coming to an end that you went down kind of a dark place or dark path?
Absolutely.
Not knowing that your singing career would take off?
Yeah, absolutely. No, before I even found Chariot, before I even saw that as some sort of path or outlet for me, this is totally full circle because tomorrow I'm actually playing a show at a casino in Fresno, and at the time I was at Fresno State. And the last turnoff before you get to this casino is a lookout over, it's called Millerton Lake in Fresno. Mm. And when the injury happened, it was full blown depression.
Mm. Yeah,
I had no drive at all. I didn't want to do anything, but I still wanted to listen to music. Mm. And that first weekend after I found out I had to have surgery, which was the weekend before I had surgery, Dave Matthews Band was playing three nights in a row at, I think it was called Concord Pavilion in Northern California.
Oh yeah, in Concord. Mm. Yep.
And we went to all three, and then I came back. And that whole week, every night, we would drive up, park in that lookout. Mm. We'd bring, like, a case of beer, and there'd be, like, four of us with guitars, all terrible guitar players.
Plus a designated driver, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. What case of beer lasts for four guys? Of course it's only for three guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
two designated drivers.
Obviously, just in case one gets tired.
And we would literally just try to dissect, what is Dave doing here? This doesn't make sense. And we would try to learn how to play guitar. And it was the only, when I was sitting there by the lake playing guitar, trying to learn Dave Matthews songs, was the only time I wasn't feeling depressed about baseball.
Yeah, right. Sure.
So that was already happening. And then right. I went back to LA to have my surgery, thinking I'd come back and play my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And through the rehab processes, the beginning was going really well. And so the depression was leaving a little bit. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to pitch my senior year. This is going to be great. And then I got basically tendonitis in a tendon that wasn't designed to be in an elbow. It was designed to be in a forearm. And that's weird thing. And so I had broke through all the scar tissue and I could straighten my arm out and I could throw. But once I got up on a mound throwing downhill, I was feeling like this pain that felt like the injury. But then they MRI it again and they're like, no, it's actually totally healthy. You just have a little bit of inflammation or tendonitis in the tendon.
Right.
In this whole thing. And I just sunk right back into it. And it got the worst when season came around and I was still at like 75%. And they're like, if this doesn't clear up, you won't pitch your senior year either. And I just went like, I think God gives you open and closed doors. Right. You know, at baseball, I had been beating my head against that door for a long time.
Right.
Ole Miss didn't work out. It was all these didn't work out stories. And again, here's another one. And I finally went, you know what? I don't want to fight the fight of my life to maybe get healthy in time for playoffs that we might not make
my
senior year. Like, I think this is a very clear picture for me.
Right.
And so I was, when I had to make that decision, I was down and out. And that's when I heard Chariot.
Mm.
So, you know, 9 months before it was, let's learn a Dave Matthews Band song. And I'm depressed because I hurt my arm. And then 9 months later, it's, I think I'm going to walk away from the sport. And then I heard that and it was Chariot. And I was like, I want to write my own music. I don't want to just play other people's music.
Was part of you relieved obviously you didn't want that and you were fighting for baseball to continue. Was part of you relieved when you finally made that decision and you said, and you heard Chariot and you said, I found a new path. I can move on and I'm not struggling with the baseball thing.
Way more scared because baseball was something that, I mean, I turned down money out of high school. I could have bought a house out of high. I could have been an 18-year-old owning a home.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm a 21-year-old a month before my 22nd birthday going, I'm going to chase down something even less predictable at 22 years old and start over.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make any sense to me at all. But all I knew was like, I don't have the capacity to sit behind a desk Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Oh man.
I know I don't have it.
I know
I can't be good at it. Oof. I could be good at it for like 2 hours a day at home.
It's going to rob
the way I want to do when I want to do it.
Yeah.
But I can't, what do they call it? Working for the man. I can't work for the man.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Oh yeah.
It's my attention span. I can't do it.
Oh, I'm
I have
same,
to do something.
Man.
If I don't care, I can't, that's why I can't read. There's never been a book in the history of the world
that's why you guys are buddies.
No,
that you finished.
It's, even if the book is amazing, every single one has a dead spot, and that's when I put it down and never pick it up.
That's
again.
Right. Yeah. You know what's funny about reading? When I read, every word says Ambien.
Oh jeez!
I'm gonna say something that's gonna make me sound
right
stupid.
To sleep. I go.
I'm gonna agree. Yeah. I'm gonna agree with you 100% right now. If the book was good enough, they'll make it a movie.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Okay. Okay.
It's true. Every good book in the world has a two-hour version.
Unforgiven. So I am a wait for the movie guy myself. Yeah. And that's why when I was in like elementary school and we had to do book reports, I would pick a choose your own adventure that the teacher had read so I didn't have to read the book. I just make it up.
Yeah.
And I'd be like,
you know what I want to touch on your story there that I absolutely loved and I resonate when I heard you say it, I resonate personally with it, is that sometimes the gifts in our life are completely disguised as trauma or what we think is the worst possible thing that can happen to us. Like that injury that you experienced, let's be honest, you probably wouldn't be a country music star where you are today, even have met your wife. Like all of this stuff might not have happened if that injury didn't occur, which you thought was drove you into depression. You know, like I wouldn't have met all of you guys in this room had I not been released from the LA Kings.
You're very lucky.
And
that you have met us.
I know. What a gift.
Hashtag blessed.
You're welcome, Brooks.
Most days, buddy, I will say it's a gift.
Most days. You are
But
welcome.
It is. For me, like, I think of how my life has been blessed from what I deem to be possibly the worst news that I'd ever received.
Mm-hmm.
And how yours is the same. And to hear that from you is amazing. I think about our listeners out there, anybody else that's received news that they think is just terrible. It could be the biggest gift that you received.
Could
in your
be.
Life.
Absolutely correct.
It was for me.
Absolutely.
100%.
And you know the other thing I really like about what you guys are saying, something that Brett said about being sort of, you know, forced out of the sport, or how God, you know, opens and closes doors. The beauty is, yes, you left a sport that is really designed for youth, but now you're playing the ultimate lifetime sport, which is music, which is, I mean, Willie Nelson's still on tour. You know what I mean?
Your longevity is a completely different word in Absolutely. Music than it is in sports.
That's correct.
Absolutely. You control That's your right. legacy. You decide how long you're relevant.
100%.
In baseball, when your body shuts down, you're just not playing
it's over.
Anymore.
It's right. even before that. Yeah. Somebody else makes a decision.
Right.
My body didn't shut
God made a decision for me at 22 down. Years old. Yeah. God finally took my elbow away, and I'm a pitcher. I mean, it's there. You know, I guess there's a few things that you could lose your voice.
Yeah,
but even then, you don't have to stop being a songwriter. I mean, there are so many. Like you can live out your legacy as long That's as you right. want as a musician.
Beethoven lost his hearing.
Yep, incredible.
So you've made this transition from sport. You've started to write songs. You know you want to continue to write songs. You had this meeting with Gavin. Now what comes where, what's the next break where you now become, what is it? What's your first single? You've had 5 number one singles. Take us through the professional journey.
So Gavin said this earlier today, but like it's 10 years plus that we've known each other, which means like that EP. That's why that doesn't live anywhere anymore. Like that was right. like that was me testing the waters.
Yeah.
I then went into the bar and restaurant gig scene for 10 years in Orange County in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got, I mean, I love to tell this story. I never got a meeting. I was playing 4 to 5 nights a week for 10 years, making a living, and never got a meeting.
Wow.
And I finally, you know, I was 31, almost 32. I had met an investor that wanted to work with me, but he was out of Atlanta. And he had connections in Nashville, and I finally just went, all right, I'm out of it. And at the time, my wife and I had been together for 6 years and had broken up, and so I was like, I'm going. I'm just going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chasing down the songwriting side of things.
Huh. Wait a second. So that's even another interesting thing of a bad thing turning into a good thing. You and your wife had broken up at the time. Now, if you were still together, you might not have packed up your things and headed to Nashville.
Yeah, she threw rocks at me like I was Lassie. I mean, she knew she wasn't ready for what I wanted and that it would be good for me to go there. Like she, even in us breaking up, she was trying to take care of me at the time.
Wow, that's interesting.
Now, were you married or dating at the time?
Dating. We had dated for 6 years and Nashville broke us up.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, we got, I mean, I know wasn't the question. We got back together 2 years later by accident. We're married with a baby on the way. Our story is 11 years. Our story is as long as me and Gavin's.
Wow.
I mean, 11 years.
Imagine what our baby would look like. You and me, bro.
Dude,
I hope it looked like Brett.
What a baby.
Are you offended if I don't want to imagine that?
So then what was the first hit single that really put you on the map?
So I didn't have an opinion about the first single. I just knew that as a new artist, I was watching what everybody was doing, and I knew that I was being given an opportunity later in life.
Mm.
I just wanted to make sure, like, I would, if left to my own devices, give me a bottle of whiskey, guitar, and I'll write ballads and love songs and breakup mm-hmm. songs all day, every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's who I am as an artist.
Okay.
But I knew that wasn't the right way to introduce myself to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I only had 3 up-tempo songs in the first record.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I had written about my mom and dad
mm-hmm.
and their Beautiful. Relationship. And so mm-hmm. I went, well, I still want to mean it and have it be important to me.
Yeah.
So we went with Sleep Without You because
Great tune.
Yeah.
My senior year in high school, my curfew was always 10, except for on game days. Basketball season, game days, because the game would end around 10. I was allowed to go eat with the team before mm-hmm. So I had 12 on Friday game days.
Mm-hmm.
We played every Tuesday and Friday,
mm-hmm.
and this one weekend, my dad's like he's a pastor. He's a early to bed guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this one weekend, my mom was away on a women's retreat with the church, and I came in Friday at curfew at 12. And my dad's like 9:30, and he's sitting up at midnight when I walk in watching SportsCenter. And if you know sports, that's an hour program. So yeah, if you're watching it at midnight, you've now watched it three times. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I walked in. I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" And he's like, "It's just still hard to sleep in our bed when mom's not here."
Yeah.
And that stuck with me. I wasn't writing songs yet. Mm. I was 18.
Wow.
I mean, that was a long time ago. And it was a title that I wrote down. You know, it was this title that woke me up. You know, we were talking about music wakes me up.
Absolutely.
I woke up, wrote it down, and went back to sleep. And then I got in the room with a couple guys, and we wrote this song about, like,
years later,
like how this is our bed together. So when you're not here, it's hard for me to go to sleep. I'm living it now. Yeah. When I wrote it, I wasn't living it. I live it now. It's really bizarre to not have my wife next to me.
Yeah.
But when I was picking a single, I knew I wanted up tempo, and that was the only one that was that personal to me. And so that's why we picked it.
I love that authenticity, man. Isn't that
great?
Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to you.
Great.
Thanks. Good guess.
Oh, that's awesome. I love hearing, like, musical journeys. Like, this was not a part of my life as an athlete. Now hearing this, it's a beautiful art. I learned through you. I learned through your friends, people that come on the show. It's an absolutely beautiful craft.
Yeah, man.
I know that it's coming across in this conversation like I'm anywhere near, like, I live music anywhere near as much as Gavin. I've never met anybody that lives music more than Gavin DeGraw. I'm not just saying that to like fluff you up.
Mm. He doesn't. Need
I will if you need me to.
He'll do
I will
himself.
If you need me to later. We'll talk. But
wait, tell me more.
No, but I'm being serious.
A tough day. Tell
I'm being
me
serious.
More.
It takes me back to Hawaii, not just like the coffee shop thing. But like, I remember we were walking through that international marketplace in Honolulu on that trip, and you were like, you walked through and you like touched an awning. Like, as we were walking through, but you like were walking ahead by yourself, and I was like, and then you did it again, but you put both hands up, and I didn't know you well at all at the time. And I was like, what?
You're like, this guy's
doing?
Nuts.
And I walked up and I asked you. I remember asking you. We were about to walk into a little bar with your band, me, you, and Liver.
Yeah.
And I walked up to you and I was like, were you measuring something? And you were like, what? And I explained this whole what I was talking about. Like, you had your hands. You were like, oh no, I don't know what I was doing, but I had a song idea. You said to me.
Oh, it's just coming, like, out through his body.
Like, you were having, like, song ideas as we were all walking together to go to a bar and hang out. And I remember thinking, like, I'm bad at this. I don't have song ideas like that often. This is crazy.
But that song Awning never came out, so that really went nowhere. It was Canopy.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, man, I love this.
It gets in your head, you know, the music. You can't shut it off.
I'm there. That's I'm all. There now.
Comes That's... out of your body, and, you know, people be talking to you, and you go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, can you imagine how many people you'd have to give songwriting credit to if you let them know that something they said out loud, you wrote down and wrote the song later? Like, man, that's amazing. Hold on. I'll be right back.
I'm going to get a transcript of all our podcasts and see if, like, one line ends up in one of your songs, and then I'm getting royalties.
It might be.
I just put you on blast. My bad, brother.
Sorry, guys.
Brooks is like, does this song On the Ice have anything to do with my hockey career?
So you had one hit single, then when did the second one come out? When did the next number one come?
Next.
That is awesome. This gig is easy. Hey, that baseball was hard stuff.
Absolutely.
This gig is easy.
Let me ask you a question, just because from the artist's perspective of something. When you had your first hit, were you feeling, cool, now I'll have another hit, great, let me ride the wave? Or were you thinking...
No, terrified, more responsibility.
Yes.
Way more responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one hit wonder is nobody wants that. You know, like, I'm not going to name a name, but you and I went and had like a late night breakfast with somebody in LA that I'm a big fan of, but they were one and done. You know who I'm talking about. Like, it doesn't lessen your talent, but if you get put in that category, you are done.
Damn.
Like, it's almost as bad as sophomore slump on the second record. It's like everybody said, you got one under your belt. You feeling comfortable now? I was like, absolutely not. Yeah. I wrote 300 songs for my second record.
Yeah.
I brought writers on every single run we did.
Mm-hmm.
I had writers on the bus for all 53 Lady Antebellum dates.
Wow. When
while my first record was out. It was pedal to the metal. Let's go.
I love this. This is the kind of hustle, honestly, that people don't get to see. They see your success, but they don't see this.
But also, I think the 19-year-old kid that's entitled, that's given a record deal too young, or took the wrong record deal and spent the money, they're sleeping on somebody's couch with no bills, no over. Like, I mean, I had a life to afford when I almost, and you have this story, you turned down record deals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to be right for you and your life at the time. And these kids that have mm-hmm. no skin in the game and no bills and nothing to take care of,
mm-hmm.
it's easy to piss it away.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I know that I started this late. Mm-hmm. I know I'm very blessed to have it. I know it could go away at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job to keep it here, longevity, mm-hmm. as long as I can. So it's mm-hmm. it's, you know, as an athlete, you understand this. It, you get out what you put in.
Yeah.
And I think athletes are successful in music because of that. Mm-hmm. That work ethic. You have it.
Mm-hmm.
You never turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't translate
so you're
to everyone.
Telling me I have a chance.
What was all that one in a million talk?
That's what I took from that, brother. Yeah, yes. My man. My so favorite good. Show we've ever done right so here.
It's a good title, so too. Yeah.
I'm going to. Easton, if one of these microphones go missing, don't worry about it.
And the comforter.
Yeah, exactly. Practicing. Brett, before we say goodbye to you, we got to send a massive shout out to Planet Hollywood.
Absolutely.
For this sweetness.
Great. Yeah. We've had a ball.
And the food's been delicious.
Amazing food. They hooked us up. Got a great place. Nice couch, even. Enough room for all the fellas.
This fantastic circular couch works well for the podcast. I think we'll have to come back, do podcasts here again.
Absolutely.
Also, Shake Shack. We had Shake Shack last night.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, we went there after the concert.
Oh, yeah.
So shout out to Shake. And if you are looking for a Shake Shack location, go to shakeshack.com or the Shack app. Did you know that? You can find yourself a Shake Shack wherever you go.
So much information.
So thank you, Planet Hollywood. Thank you, Shake Shack. Brett, I love your story, dude. Thank you so
great
much for
story,
coming to share
man.
With where amazing. Can people find you? Where can do you have a new album coming out? Where obviously on iTunes, everything.
We actually did just put out a new acoustic project.
Great.
That Gavin sang on with our song Chapters.
Yeah, man. Love the song.
Played and sang, and it's
love
just
it.
A special
love
song.
The
and there's some new stuff that you'll be hearing about kind of soon. We might kind of break the album cycle for a minute to put out. I've written a song about my daughter that I'm really proud of, and we might put that out early just to give people more content. But
great,
I will always be putting things out.
Awesome.
That's right,
and then
man.
Online, do you engage with people online?
BrettYoungMusic.com and all the socials are at BrettYoungMusic. And yes, absolutely, I'm very active on socials. My wife, Taylor Mills Young, is also she's better than me. So if you want to go check her out too, she's always she's better at talking about what I'm doing than I am, so you can get even more content from her socials. But yeah, we're active, and we want to be connected to the community.
Awesome.
Yeah,
and
man,
then baby
nice.
On the way for you guys.
We're about three weeks away.
Yeah.
First one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for
beautiful
you,
little girl.
Great.
So we're so excited.
Well, we
great.
Should get
good
you out of here
bro.
So you can
congrats.
Catch that plane and head back home.
Thank you.
To look after that lady.
Thank you guys for having me. This is a blast. I hope like that people don't listen to us and then think that like this is actually how men think. No, I'm just kidding. We're the best. So
promote that, run that, loop that. Our new producers to loop
exactly
that.
Right.
New intro.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now get Gavin an egg sandwich and let's take a break.
Yeah,
that's it.
Thank you, buddy, so much for sharing your story, for coming in, friend of the show. Thanks,
absolutely.
Gavin, for
thanks.
For
awesome.
Hooking this up.
Thank you,
and thank you everybody for listening. Brett's story is incredible. People out there listening,
amazing.
I say this all the time. Everything is an opportunity, and that's
yes,
how you
sir.
Looked at that injury, and you've taken it and created an amazing life. So that's it for today. Till next week, take care of one another, love one another, and we'll see you back here on How Men Think.
Well
thanks,
done.
Guys.
Great
thanks,
job, man.
Buddy.
Thanks, Brett Young.
Awesome.